Giancarlo drives the ball high and deep to left. This is a no-doubter. And a ball lined and caught by Echeverria.
The Marlins Hot Stove Show with Kyle Seeloff is on 940 Wins.
Here's the pitch.
Miami Sports.
And Yelich drives a ball high and deep, center field. Going back, Venable. Up, up, and away, it's gone.
Pleasant good evening, everybody. Great to have you back on board tonight. You're listening to the Marlins Hot Stove Show on 940 Wins and iHeartRadio.com. I'm Kyle Seeloff. Our producer, Mike Lekomiak, is with us this evening as well. Well, it's been quite the week for the Marlins since we joined you last Monday, and we've got a great show for you tonight. We'll go a lot of different ways, but we've got a lot of really good information as it pertains to Marlins Park this season, in addition to a conversation I had last week with Marlins closer A.J. Ramos. And in just a few minutes, we're going to go back and cover and have sound for you from last Tuesday's press conference, which featured the introduction of new Marlins starting pitcher Wei-Yin Chen. On top of all of that, we've got some audio for you from Wei-Yin Chen's agent, a very well-known agent in the industry, Scott Boras. Boras fielded questions from the media after Chen's press conference last Tuesday, and it's really good stuff. He talked about a lot, including the latest with Marlins ace Jose Fernandez, so I'll be sure to play that for you coming up shortly. Don't forget, if you missed any of tonight's show, it's always accessible every Tuesday afternoon on Marlins.com/podcasts and on our Hot Stove Show page on Marlins.com underneath the video tab. So if you have to run out of the house and do a few errands tonight and you'll miss a portion of the show, you can always go back and listen tomorrow afternoon. Well, when less than 1 month away until the start of spring training up in Jupiter, if you're looking to get up to Roger Dean Stadium and see the guys, write these following dates down. Friday, February 19th. That'll be the day pitchers and catchers report. Monday, February 22nd. That'll be the first day of full squad workouts, spring training. As many of you know, it's always a blast up there at Roger Dean. Players certainly accessible. You can stand right behind the cages while the guys take batting practice. And hey, head over to the Boneyard and watch Perry Hill work with the infielders. And you can even see on so many of the days out on the backfields, the future here in South Florida, as many, many minor leaguers get their daily work in. Up in Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter. So in addition to all of that, allow me, if you will, to give you a few more dates that may be of interest to you coming up here in the coming weeks. Make sure you join the Marlins and celebrity chef Adrian Calvo at the second annual Taste of Miami at Marlins Park on Thursday, February 18th. Indulge in the stylish flavors of Miami with delectable culinary bites and premium spirits, craft beers and wines from the best local restaurants and breweries. The highlight of the evening will be a sizzling head-to-head live cooking competition between Miami's finest chefs and Marlins ballplayers. For more information on tickets and sponsorships, call 305-480-2550 or go to marlins.com/tasteofmiami. And hey, fans, being a Marlins season ticket holder, it's the only way, and keep this in mind, the only way to guarantee access to the 2017 All-Star Game at Marlins Park. Make sure you place your 2016 Marlins season ticket deposit today. Getting close to that deadline, and join the Fish family. You can guarantee All-Star Game tickets with as little as a 20-game mini-plan purchase. Call 1-877-MARLINS or go to marlins.com/tickets. Cannot stress that enough. Make sure, being a season ticket holder, the only way to guarantee yourself access to the 2017 All-Star Game at Marlins Park. Well, much of this is right around the corner. A lot taking place on the weekends. We'll really cap off the offseason with Fan Fest on the 20th of February, so make sure you come out to Marlins Park and join us for the day. It's sure to be a fun time. Well, let's get into our first conversation tonight, shall we? Last Tuesday, the Marlins announced they had signed starting pitcher Wei-Yin Chen to a 5-year deal running through 2020 with a vesting option in 2021. The Marlins president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, who we'll hear from in just a second, made the announcement. But here's a little background for you on Chen. The 30-year-old left-hander posted career bests in ERA and WHIP last season, walks and hits per innings pitched. Chen, keep in mind, who comes from Baltimore, a very hitter-friendly park, and in addition plays in the American League East, ended with a 3.34 ERA and a WHIP of 1.22, all of that coming in 31 starts last season. He was 7th among American League starting pitchers in ERA, fourth among left-handers, and over the course of his final 28 starts of last season, he walked just 33 guys in, get this, 176 and two-thirds innings. That ranks second among qualifying American League starters. So he's mature. He's got the control. He's proven himself here in the States and in Major League Baseball. All of that led Michael Hill and his staff to target Chen from the beginning of this past offseason.
Our primary focus after we hired our manager and put our coaching staff into place was to upgrade our starting rotation. And that was the focus as the offseason started. And weigh in was a target from the outset. And you never know how the offseason unfolds and how the marketplace unfolds. But it was something that we wanted to explore. It was something, an area where we felt like we needed to add depth and add quality. And as the calendar turned and we rolled into the new year, we got a phone call and spoke with Jeffrey, and from there we went in earnest to sign Wei in. Scott, I want to thank you for your efforts in the process. And our goal was to find someone to add to our starting pitching mix. And we love the starting pitching mix that we have with Jose at the top of it and Tom Kohler and Jared Cozart and some of our young pitchers who you got to see at the end of last year. But we really wanted to add a veteran, consistent presence that we felt like day in and day out would give us an opportunity to win. And in Wei in, you look at what he has done over his time in Baltimore. He's been a consistent producer, takes the ball every 5 days, and gives his club an opportunity to win. And when we were able to come to an agreement, it just made sense that we felt like we added one of the top pitching prospects in the marketplace. So it's our honor, Wei in, now to welcome you to the Miami Marlins and present you with your jersey.
So Wei-Yin Chen, he's set to become the first Taiwanese player in Marlins history. He's one of just eight Taiwanese pitchers in Major League history. His 46 career victories rank second among Taiwanese pitchers, behind only Chin Ming Wong, a name familiar to many, who had 62. After four seasons with the O's in Baltimore, Chen, as you could imagine, is excited about the new opportunity Miami presents.
Hello, 大家好，我是陈伟英，然后
Hi, everybody. I'm Wayne Chen. And first of all, I would like to thank Mr. Loria for having such strong confidence in me. And also, I would like to my agent, Scott, who negotiated a really good contract for me. And I'm also very excited to be here and also to be part of this very young and talented team. And I hope that my joining the team will make this team more competitive.
Speaking of a young and talented team, Chen is set to join Jose Fernandez, Tom Kohler, Jared Cozart, and presumably either Edwin Jackson or Adam Conley in the starting rotation here in 2016. Michael Hill was asked about Chen and why he was the right fit for the organization.
As we looked at the free agent market, we wanted to improve it with the best quality that we possibly could. And you look at Wei in and what he has done on a consistent basis, and that is take the ball, that's pitch effectively from an evaluation standpoint, a three-pitch mix, and ability to control bat speed and keep hitters off balance, and felt like his skill set could really be productive and help us win ball games.
Now, as it pertains to Chen's new home, he should be a bit more comfortable. Although the dimensions of Marlins Park are set to change, it'll still be more spacious than Camden Yards, where he often pitched with the Orioles. But for Chen, he's not so much worried about the dimensions.
Actually,
I don't really think about it because I just want to concentrate on my game, just want to pitch well, and I hopefully through my pitching I can help the team maybe to be a very competitive team. But as you all know, we have a very good hitting coach in Barry Bonds. So with the fans moving in, maybe he will help me to get some more home runs.
Well, that got some chuckles out of the media in attendance. 31 starts for the Orioles last season, and one thing Chen was in most control of on the mound was his control. Since 2012, he's thrown his fastball 55% of the time, which was his go-to pitch amongst his five-pitch repertoire. Here's what Chen had to say when asked whom he thinks he is as a pitcher.
我是怎样一个投手？我觉得就是我是一个是以速球为主的投手。 那
As you might know, I'm a fastball pitcher, but I'm really working hard on my breaking ball and my off-speed pitches during the past few years. And also, I was called a flyball pitcher, but actually, I don't want to think about that. I don't care what type of pitcher I am. I just want to concentrate on my game and try to pitch well in every game.
Prior to signing with the Orioles in 2012, Chen pitched parts of five seasons with the Chunichi Dragons of the Nippon Professional Baseball League, where he posted a 2.90 ERA. Chen had this to say when asked about the most difficult challenge coming to play in Major League Baseball.
在这四年里面，我其实刚开始会比较担心，就是生活里面会有出现一些比较困扰的，可能语言上面啊，那。
Well, when I first came to America, my biggest concern was the language barrier. But actually during this 4 year, I think I improved a lot in my English. But still, I think there's still room to improve. So I think I still need like better communication with my teammates, with my coaches, and they could, with the better communication, I believe we can do better on the field and to help this team to win.
Now, I mentioned Chen's agent, a popular one amongst prominent Major League Baseball players, Scott Boras. He was on hand when the Marlins announced the Chen signing. One portion of Chen's contract with the Marlins indicates there is an opt-out, something that's become increasingly popular amongst sought-after free agents. Here's Boras on what led to the opt-out in Chen's contract.
The projection, obviously, the opt-outs are, when I first started using them, I'm not sure I want to say how long ago I started using them, but well before the 2000s. They weren't quite in vogue then, but in that particular situation, I used it primarily to reach an agreement, create a bridge that allowed you to have a feeling about the value of the player during the term of the contract. And when you're in contracts where you believe the player is going to improve during the course of the contract, you would then look into that that provision, and we think that Wayne coming to this ballpark and being in this league, that he has an opportunity to, and believe me, a 3.35 ERA in Baltimore in the AL East is quite an achievement. But we believe that I went back and looked at players like Tom Glavine and people of that like who've thrown in the National League East, and I've seen that there's been some mirroring of his age and his performance to Glavine when he was 29. And so we really wanted to look at the fact of how we valued Wayne at the time and certainly how Michael and the Marlins, and that really was a bridge for us to strike a deal.
Speaking of the opt-out, let's get and break down a few numbers here. Chen's going to make $8.6 million this season and $11.6 million next season. After 2017, keep this in mind, he must exercise his 2018 through 2020 options together within 4 days after the conclusion of the World Series. And of course, if he were to do that, there's a $16 million vesting option the final year of his contract in 2021. Before we head to break, and I mentioned it at the top of the show, we've got some really good sound from Scott Boras, and you just heard from him a little bit. This is scattering a variety of topics, including the latest with Jose Fernandez. So let's get to that. Here's Scott Boras, starting with why Wei-Yin Chen is a great fit here in Miami.
You know, you have eight position players. When you go to rank them among the National League, they're, you know, really towards the top of the position players. And if you can supplement that with, you know, with pitching depth and really get a quality. I said, you know, I have a guy that he was the number one pitcher of the Baltimore Orioles the last 2 years. People don't classify him as that, but that's what he was. And I said, so we looked into that and process began. And, you know, we ended up being I think, really a good deal for the Marlins and gave them a vision, a different vision than I think what they had coming into the 16 season.
Now, the Marlins have been spiking up and down as far as spending money. Did you know what they were going to spend money when you called them? Or
I'm the eternal optimist. I try to look at the fact of what the focus of the franchise is, because I believe that, you know, it's like with Kansas City. I have seven players on their team. I go, your owner, with this team, you can make $50 million more. All you have to do is play in the World Series. And in that Detroit, when I've done that, and we've had, well, there now twice, Detroit twice, you have a franchise that can make $100 million more by getting their revenues just from preparing in the postseason. And then you have the impact of postseason play on attendance, which is usually almost a 20% gradient over from 1 year to the next. You know, the Royals used to draw 2.1 million fans, 2 million fans, and now they're drawing 2.8, 2.9. And Detroit was drawing like 1.4, 1.5 million. Now they draw near 3 million. So it's, through execution and performance and quality players, you can certainly make a great deal more revenues out of a franchise. So at inception, I talk more about what they have the capacity to make and earn with the addition of players. Obviously, they have to advance the contracts first before they earn the money. So,
Scott, in getting Jose signed before arbitration, was there any discussion of beyond the 1 year? Was there any common ground there to perhaps explore that?
I think for the franchise and for us, it was what we all agreed upon was that when you have a player coming off, you know, Tommy John and being injured, you're asking everyone a lot of speculation, and you want to make sure the player's durable. You want to make sure that his performance levels are all what they are, and so in doing those, you know, we all agreed that, you know, that's something we would forecast down the road.
Scott, obviously the situation with Harvey at the end of the last year with the Mets got to be kind of a one of those big media issue type things. Right. A little bit different though between Harvey.
You know, I told Dr. Andrews, I go, why am I the one that this is your advice? Why am I the guy that, you know? But
there's a difference here between Jose and Harvey. Harvey was coming off; he had not pitched at all the previous year, whereas Jose had thrown not only whatever innings he threw up here, but the rehab innings he threw in the minors. What kind of difference does that make, do you think, in terms of what he'll be able to do this year coming up?
You know, these are really Michael and I have talked a bit about it, and it's more, you know, it's what the doctor is going to recommend, you know, and Dr. Eletrage, you know, we had him on the phone last year, and Michael and I we were discussing these very things, and I just try to increase the dialogue between the team and the surgeon and where the player's at. You know, Jose's been progressing fine. We have our Sport Fitness Institute here in Miami, and he's there every day and working out with this specific surgery or, you know, post-surgery training therapist. And so he is doing all those things. And so we have a running dialogue between Jose and the surgeon, and we continue that dialogue with the team. And then I just think they've got to come to an understanding about what limits the doctor wants for him and go from there.
Have they not done that yet?
Something, you know, I like to do it in spring training, you know, because as the team goes to set up their course and we set up ours, that the player knows. And the other thing is, in spring training, the players, you know, you're down to the point where you've got through it. You know, he's in great shape. He's ready to go. He's healthy. And now he's getting ready to, if he had any kind of issue in spring training, that would also be in the consideration at the time. So you try to do it at the end of spring training to really know where the player's at, and just right before the season's going
to
begin.
You see, you take guys to free agency smartly, get the maximum, seems like. So when's the last time a pitcher of yours hasn't gone?
I've had a number, you know. They only report the big free agent contracts. The truth of the matter is, I would estimate it's in the 40 percentile of players that have signed early contracts. You know, Jared Weaver's an example, or, you know, I can go back and name, you know, a number of players that have signed their contracts and frankly have never left their franchise, like Jason Verrett. Sarachek was a lifetime Red Sox, and Bernie Williams was a lifetime Yankee, and so you have situations really where if the team's competitive, you usually often the player has more incentive to stay, you know, where they're going to be in that environment to want to win, and that's usually some of the reasons that players have left. It wasn't just economic; it was really more about getting to a franchise where they felt they had a better opportunity to achieve their goals off the field.
Some really good stuff. A lot was covered. I was particularly interested in what Boris had to say about Jose Fernandez. They're not going to formulate a plan for Jose until spring training. And I actually tend to agree with what Boris had to say in regards to a contract moving forward for Jose. Boris said, to be fair to everyone involved, they've just got to wait and see how Jose responds this season. If he's magnificent, his value is going to continue to rise, and rightfully so. So by all accounts and by what we heard, I wouldn't expect anything to take place between the Marlins and Jose before the start of camp and during the season for that matter as well. But again, you just never know. But I thought that was a pretty intelligent plan that they're going to lay out. They're not going to lay out a plan in terms of this season for Jose until spring training as it pertains to a long-term extension. It's a wait-and-see period. 2016 could be a mightily big year for Jose Fernandez. If he's terrific, that value is going to continue to skyrocket. But who knows? A guy coming off Tommy John surgery, and he's going to pitch his first big league season since that surgery 2 seasons ago. We'll have to see how he responds. Whether it's a family celebration, a networking event, or a fundraiser for your organization, a Marlins Group sales rep can help arrange your group outing at Marlins Park in 2016. Call the Marlins Group Sales Department today, 305-480-2523, or email groups@marlins.com. Let's take a quick break, shall we? Coming up next, Marlins closer A.J. Ramos joins the Marlins Hot Stove Show. We'll recap A.J.'s 2015 season and look ahead to the 2016 campaign. Don't go anywhere. That's next on the Marlins Hot Stove Show on 940 WINS and iHeartRadio.com.
Baseball's burning questions all winter long. Fire up the stove with the Marlins' Kyle Seeloff on 940 WINS, Miami Sports.
Well, welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Happy Monday to all of you out there listening tonight. Less than 1 month until the start of spring training in Jupiter for the Marlins. Exciting times lie ahead. And just about this time every year, everyone starts to get back into the swing of things and look forward to another spring and summer and, well, hopefully a fall full of Marlins baseball. So we've covered the Wei-Yin Chen signing. We heard from Chen, Marlins president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, and we also heard from sports agent and Chen's representative, Scott Boris, just a couple minutes ago. Now it's time to hear from Marlins closer A.J. Ramos, whom I spoke with last Friday over the phone from his off-season home in California. A.J., he's coming off a remarkable 2015. One in which he totaled 32 saves and pitched to the tune of a 2.30 ERA. Those 32 saves coming before and after the departure of former Marlins closer Steve Cishek, who was traded in the middle of summer to the St. Louis Cardinals. As you'll hear from AJ talk about in just a minute, he was bred to be a closer in the minor leagues. But last season, after inheriting the closer's role, it was a year full of firsts and a year of learning for the 29-year-old.
Joining us over the phone on the Marlins Hot Stove Show from his off-season home in California, Marlins closer A.J. Ramos. A.J., first of all, thanks for making some time for us, as I know you're busy getting your off-season work in, something we'll talk about. But I'd like to start by asking you about your role as the closer, the responsibilities you inherited last summer before and after Steve Cishek was dealt to the St. Louis Cardinals. So take us through last season, and how difficult was it for you to take over a job many are not capable of doing in the big leagues?
Well, first of all, it was tough because you always want Steve's a great guy, and you always want him, I want him to succeed, and it's just that was a tough part of it. I never want to do that. You know, he's a great guy, but being able to assume the closer's role was something that I worked for since the minor league. So it wasn't too out of the question for me. You know, so I was expecting it, and I was ready to go when it happened, so it might have been an easy transition for me because I was pretty much bred in the minor league system to be a closer. So it's a tough role, but I've had the mindset since I was in the minor league. So I kind of went in with an easy transition.
Along those lines, how trying or maybe even exhausting was last season for you, AJ? You certainly had your ups and downs, but at the conclusion of last season, when you finally got to take a break and decompress a little bit, did you say to yourself, I really just put in a full year's worth of work? It was quite the grind for me?
Definitely. I mean, early on in the season, obviously, it was tough, you know, with the team and making the managerial switch. You know, the media coverage and all that, it was tough, but that's part of the game. So we all kind of got together and decided that, you know, none of the outside forces are gonna influence our game, and that we're just gonna go out there and play to the best of our abilities. And that was what I was able to do. And no matter whether I pitched good or bad, I tried to keep the same mentality, because you got a game tomorrow. That was my whole mentality. You know, whatever happened, good or bad. You know, learn from the bad, and take, you know, what you can from the good, and go out there and pitch the best ability to your next day.
Hey, as it pertains to you closing, and you mentioned it was something that you were bred to do in the minor leagues, but I'm sure to an extent it's different on the big league stage. With that being said, did you learn aspects of it on the fly last year, or was your ninth inning approach the same as your approach you took when you were setting up in the eighth?
Yeah, well, I've always tried to keep that closer mentality. I mean, when I got called up, that's what I was doing. I was closing, and when I got called up, I was, you know, fifth, sixth. I mean, anywhere from the fifth inning on to the ninth, and I try to keep that same mentality. But obviously, when you actually start to close, there are parts that are a little bit different. Maybe your adrenaline, the hitters are studying you a little bit better because you are the last guy that they're facing. So you definitely have to learn a little bit on the fly, but overall, if I sat there and I made this position greater than it already is, you know, I wouldn't be able to perform. So I try to take it as, you know, I know it sounds cliche, one out of a time, one pitch at a time, but that really does work. Sometimes when you try to do too much and you make something more than what it already is, you try to do too much, or it becomes too big for you and you're not able to perform the way you know you can. So, I try to stay out there and keep the same mentality I had since I was in the minor league, and then also continue to learn and tweak my approach a little bit and my routine.
Marlins closer A.J. Ramos with us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. A.J., I'm wondering, guys throw very hard out of the bullpen. You yourself throw very hard. But when a guy like Carter Capps is throwing 100 in the eighth and you're throwing 95 in the ninth, has that made you more cognizant of your fastball when you're closing? Because the truth of the matter is, and I'm sure you'll attest to this, 95 is much more hittable than 100. So control-wise, has that forced you to be more perfect, you think?
I think so. That, and along with that, with my changeup and slider and curveball, you know, I've learned to use movement. When guys are going out there to see Carter, they're kind of revved up.
Right.
You know, they're kind of just, you know, ready to go out there after fastball. So I kind of take advantage of that. You know, everybody's trying to blow fastballs by people. I try to pitch a little smarter.
Right.
I know that the fact that 95 is in the major leagues is very hittable. I mean, even people that throw 98, 99, 100,
yeah,
they get squared up pretty easily too. So it's all about placing the ball, learning how to pitch, and having four or five pitches in my pocket is also an advantage for me, because I'm going to face those guys one time and they got to choose, all right, well, which one of these pitches is he going to throw at me? So I use that to my advantage, and I assess the situation and see what pitches work better with what hitters, and I go from there.
AJ, it's been quite the off season for the Marlins. I'm sure you followed the moves closely and you've been kept up to date. Any particular feeling on the new managerial change that's brought Don Mattingly to South Florida?
I think it's going to be good. I think, you know, I've gotten to talk to him a little bit, and I'm excited. He's excited. It seems like he's going to be a guy that's good for the team. He's been in the big market. He's been in L.A. to where there's a lot of crazy things going on. So, I mean, he's going to be – the media is going to be pretty easy for him compared to over here in L.A. So it's going to be a little bit of a change for him, but – it may change for us, but I think with the core guys that we have from last year and the new additions we got this year, I think it's going to transition pretty easily, because we already know basically the way that our style of play, and then we're just going to tweak it a little bit with what Mattingly wants to do, and I think we're going to be in good shape. I'm pretty excited for it.
With that being said, you mentioned you've talked to Donnie. Juan Nieves has been named the pitching coach. I'm curious, have you had a chance to talk with Juan yet? And even if you have or have not, for you, how long does it take to adjust to a new pitching coach?
I talked to him, it was actually last week. He called me, and we had a conversation for about 30 minutes. Just talking a little bit of baseball and talking about life. I think with guys that are really, I've heard he's a really easygoing guy. Mm-hmm. I've heard that he if you need information, he's going to give it to you. And I heard he's a really good pitching coach. And guys like that, I mean, it's easy to transition to them. There's no like ego and all that stuff to where
right.
Their word is over yours no matter what, because they've had, you know, this much experience and coach this person. That's not the way he is. So I think with someone like him, I think it's going to be really easy to transition. You know, Chuck Hernandez was a great guy too. He was a great guy. So it's going to be an easy transition.
Switching gears a bit, AJ, it's been quite the offseason, full of awards for your teammate, second baseman D. Gordon. From your perspective last season, watching D from the bullpen, even in the dugout sometimes for the first couple of innings, how enjoyable was it to watch him last season? What can you tell us about D as a teammate?
As a teammate, D is one of the best teammates I've had, in whether it be college, any level I've played at. He brings a lot of energy to the locker room. And on the field, I mean, people feed off that. And when you have his energy mixed with Giancarlo's power and just the overall feel of the team, it's a great feeling. You know, I'm happy for D. This guy works hard. He's always doing extra work with Bone. He's always in the cage with Frankie trying to get better. He's the kind of teammate that you would love to have. I'm excited for him, and I'm happy that he got, you know, what he got, his contract and everything. And,
yeah.
It's good to see good people, good things happen to good people. So
when you have a guy like that at second base and even a shortstop like Adani Echevarria, who has not won a gold glove, I'm sure he's going to at some point because he's been absolutely fantastic. Does that take some stress off of you as a pitcher?
Definitely. Our defense is good. You got Yelich, you know, in the outfield. You got Yelich and Stanton. Anybody they put out there, our defense is solid. Especially with up the middle, they hit a ground ball, and I feel like every ground ball is going to be caught.
Yeah.
No matter where it is, especially, you know, when they hit it to, you know, up the middle. There been times where there's a ball hit right between the second, short and third, and oh my God, it's a base hit, and then Adani goes over there and throws it across the field and gets the guy out. I'm like, this is unreal. It gives you a lot of confidence to go up there and throw strikes and just to do your job, not worry about trying to make people miss your pitches. Just going out there, getting ground ball, and you know that the defense is going to get for you.
Speaking of teammates, I know you're good friends with Giancarlo Stanton. You guys spend some time together in the off season, and we've heard that you're good friends, but I don't know if I've ever heard, AJ, when did that friendship take off for you? Was it when you arrived in the big leagues?
Yeah, definitely. It was really cool with Ricky Nolasco when he was here.
Ah.
And I'm still really good friends with Ricky. And we all, me, him, and me, Ricky, and Stanton lived together when I got called up. And we just all on the same agenda as far as off the field and on the field stuff. We were all single. So, and then just our personalities were pretty much the same. So I think that's when it started to take off. And it's where it is now. You know, it's they're like my brothers. And, you know, I'm very blessed to have them in my life. It's pretty cool.
Along those lines, he's certainly been one of the game's electric players the last 3 to 4 years. And from that friend perspective, how fun has it been to watch him accomplish all that he has from your perspective?
Again, I mean, he's another teammate that is up there in my list. He's a guy he's really down to earth. You would never know that he's, you know, the highest paid baseball player, you know, ever. So he takes that. He's a down-to-earth guy. He doesn't ask too much. It's really easy going. People like that, you want them to succeed, and they deserve everything they get. He works hard, and I hope the sky's the limit with that guy. You know, so I think it's pretty cool watching him, and I enjoy watching his success.
Yeah, it sure has been. Marlins closer A.J. Ramos with us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. A.J., a lot of talk about the fences being lowered and moved in at Marlins Park this season. I know you haven't gotten a chance to see them yet. At least I don't believe you have. But your thoughts on the change, and do you think it'll affect the way you go after guys in the ninth inning?
I don't think it's gonna affect that. If you're worried about the fences and all that stuff, but that's just other stuff, that's other distractions.
Yeah.
My job is to get ground balls and get out. I mean, you can't really complain when you go like play at a place like Cincinnati where the fences are way in.
Yeah.
You know, I don't change my game. I just try to get the ball down. That's the name of the game anyway, getting the ball down. I don't even want the guys to hit it that far anyway. So it's all about it's all about getting outs and getting the ball down. I'm obviously I'll know pretty quick, you know, when a ball's hit out now. Mm-hmm. It'll be a lot easier to tell. Because sometimes they square a ball up, and I'm like, well, that could be gone, I don't know, in this park. And
yeah,
most of the time it wasn't. So this time I'll be able to know if they hit it out or not a lot easier. But it doesn't change it too much. I'm still going to go out there and do, you know, my game plan, and I'm going to go with that until it doesn't work anymore.
With us for a couple more minutes, Marlins closer A.J. Ramos on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. A.J., spring training right around the corner. I'm sure you'll be making your way back to South Florida here pretty soon. But after the season ends, how much time do you spend decompressing? And furthermore, when do you really get back into the swing of things in regards to your off-season workouts?
Well, I take about a month off of everything. I don't run, I don't lift, I don't do anything. And I take a month off, I travel. And then after that, I start to run a little bit. Like in November, I start to run a little bit and do some light lifting.
Mm-hmm.
And, by mid-November, I'm lifting pretty good. And December is when I get into it, the heavyweight. And then towards the end of December, I start to kind of back off a little bit with the heavyweight and start to throw and kind of get a feel for throwing a bit. And usually that takes a little bit to get used to. It always feels like my arm's going to fall off the first few days. You know,
Let's chat about the upcoming season a little bit. There have been some nice additions. Wei-Yin Chen, that signing announced just the other day. Edwin Jackson, Chris Johnson, amongst others. I know health is always the key, but I would imagine you guys should feel pretty good about the 25-man roster when you break camp. There's a lot of talent on this ball club.
Definitely, man. I mean, that's the biggest thing is having depth. Last year we struggled with that a little bit. There's a lot of injuries, so a lot of guys that were coming up that weren't maybe ready to play or whatever. So I think that with the new I have, I think it's going to be good. We got a lot of people that can play different places and not just, you know, play a position, but actually be good at it as well. So when you have that kind of depth, it's easy to make moves, double switches, and all that stuff. So I think we'll have a good time, you know, put the lineup together, and then also managing late in the game too.
You personally, AJ, if I were to ask you the one thing you continue to work on and the one area of your game you think needs the most improvement, your answer would be what?
A little more control with all my pitches. I tend to kind of get out of the zone a little bit and put myself into trouble. So if I can eliminate that, I think it'll make things a lot easier for me and for the fans' heart. I think a lot of people get heart attacks sometimes when I come in and pitch. But if I can stop doing that, it'll add some years on my parents' life too. So
before we let you go, AJ, and again, we can't thank you enough for the time. You've been in the big league since 2012. To date, you've done a fantastic job. What's the one thing you've learned about this game or yourself that's made you so successful?
Well, I think is not taking anything for granted, knowing that I've been seeing guys come up and do well for a couple years or a few games and just fizzle out. It's just taking every game and whether you do good or bad, being the same person. And because a lot of times when you start doing bad, you start to overthink things and you start to try to do things that you don't normally do, and all of a sudden you're in a funk. And also when you're doing well, you know, you don't pay attention to what you're doing to your mechanics, and all of a sudden you're so far off and you can't come back. So just being really observant of yourself and trying to be the same person and trying to get better every day. And I think that's what's helped me be successful so far.
AJ, it's been a pleasure, man. We can't thank you enough for the time. Be safe, stay healthy, and we can't wait to catch up with you in Jupiter in just under a month now.
Yes, sir. Thanks.
Good stuff from AJ. A great guy, too, you know. It'll be an interesting year in regards to the back end of the Marlins bullpen, and I wouldn't be shocked if you were to find at some point this season, pending his success, Carter Capps could take over the closer's role. The reason I say that, and I go back to the question in which I asked AJ how tough it is to relieve a guy like Carter that throws so hard, and that AJ has really had to focus on mixing things up as well as locating. So put yourself in Don Mattingly's shoes here. Do you want a more dominant pitcher velocity-wise in the eighth or the ninth inning? Personally, and it's not that AJ didn't do a fantastic job, I think he may project more as that slice-and-dice type of guy in the eighth, and then all bets are off come the ninth inning when Caps blows it by, guys. Either way, and you hear this often when teams have a dominant back end of the bullpen, the Marlins could seriously limit the opposition offensively to seven innings. If you can do that and you can get the success out of Ramos and Caps you think they can have, you're going to win a lot of baseball games, and those one-run leads come in the top of the eighth inning. You're going to be feeling pretty good about those final six outs. And by the way, if they go Caps and then Ramos in the eighth and the ninth, like I believe they probably will to open up the season, there's no problem with that at all either. Either way, no matter who pitches and what inning, the Marlins have a couple of terrific and eighth and ninth inning guys. Let's step aside for a couple of minutes. Coming up next, Major League Baseball columnist for the USA Today, Bob Nightingale, will join us. We just got done talking about the dominant back end of the Marlins bullpen, but what does Bob think about the Marlins starting rotation? We'll get that answer and more when we return with the Marlins Hot Stove Show next on 940 Wins and iHeartRadio.com.
Baseball's hot stove season is here. The Marlins' Kyle Seeloff is on. 940 Wins.
It's to D. Gordon, a high fly ball right field. Back goes Francoeur. He's at the wall. Goodbye!
Miami Sports.
Well, welcome back to the Marlins' Hot Stove Show. Always great to be with you on a Monday night. I'm Kyle Seeloff, our producer Mike Lekomiak with us in the control room as always, and we've had a fun first half hour, some terrific guests and some great sound. If you weren't with us early on tonight, we recap the Wei-Yin Chen signing. We heard from Chen, we heard from the Marlins president, the baseball operations, Michael Hill, and we also heard from Chen's agent, Scott Boras, for a bit. He talked a bit about the Chen signing, what went into his opt-out and his contract, and we also heard from Boras chatting a bit with the media about the latest on Jose Fernandez and whether or not he projects a long-term deal to get done sooner rather than later for Jose with the Marlins. Long story short, your answer to that question is no, but he had what I thought to be a very reasonable answer. He said, quite frankly, we've got to see how Jose responds in his first full season back from Tommy John surgery. Wouldn't be fair to the Marlins or to Jose to try and work out a deal now. Anyway, that's what Boras had to say on that front. And if you missed it just a couple of minutes ago, we ran my conversation from last Friday with Marlins closer AJ Ramos. He was spectacular, a great guy. He talked about last season, the trials and tribulations, switching roles to closing, his relationship with his good friend and Marlins star Giancarlo Stanton, amongst a variety of other topics. So as always, if you miss anything from the Marlins Hot Stove Show, please feel free to head to marlins.com/podcasts or the Hot Stove Show page underneath the video tab on marlins.com tomorrow afternoon. You'll have access to tonight's show in its entirety. Before we get to our next guest, I'd like to remind you about a few upcoming events as well as some information for you as it pertains to the Marlins. You heard it just a couple of minutes ago. Make sure you save the date for the 2016 Miami Marlins Fan Fest at Marlins Park, Saturday, February 20th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make sure you bring the family out to the park for an entire day of fun. You can purchase your single game tickets for the 2016 season. Select your seats for season tickets and mini plans. Get autographs from Marlins players and alumni and enjoy games, activities, music, entertainment, and more for all ages. Again, that's the Miami Marlins Fan Fest on Saturday, February 20th at Marlins Park from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make sure you go to marlins.com for more information. And, hey, make sure you tee it up with the Marlins at the third annual Jack McKeon Celebrity Golf Classic. Going to be held at Crandon Golf at Key Biscayne on Wednesday, February 17th. Foursomes, individual spots, sponsorship, opportunities already available. Join Marlins players, coaches, executives, other celebrities for an exciting day of golf at the luxurious Crandon Golf Course overlooking Biscayne Bay in downtown Miami. Call 1-877-MARLINS or go to marlins.com/golf. Don't miss the Jack McKeon Celebrity Golf Classic on February 17th. A lot coming up. As always, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to head to marlins.com or call 1-877-MARLINS. Before we wrap things up tonight, last week, Major League Baseball columnist for the USA Today, Bob Nightingale, was kind enough to join me over the phone to chat about the upcoming 2016 season for the Marlins and his favorites headed into the new year.
USA Today Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale joining us over the phone on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Bob, first and foremost, thank you. It is a pleasure to chat with you. And let's start Marlins specific, but more general. What do you make of the 2016 Marlins?
You know, I think it's a chance to be a very exciting team, an improved team. You know, I thought this team would go to the World Series a year ago. Obviously, things fell apart. You know, they've done some nice things there. There's a lot of optimism, particularly with the Don Mattingly coming in with his staff, Barry Bonds as a hitting coach, you know, great pitching coach as well with a great track record in Chicago. So I think the division's wide open. I think some teams will take a little step back here, like the Mets, where the Marlins have a chance to be competitive.
When you talk about Don Mattingly, what are your impressions on the managerial and staff changes here in Miami? How do you think that fits with Don coming over from Los Angeles?
Well, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. I mean, he'll be beloved by the players, by the community, by the media, not a mean bone in his body. I think there were times he struggled as a manager there, but he was a young manager, and we'll see. But I think there was interference from up above. I think if it wasn't for the interference, he would have stayed put. I think now he can be his own man and show people what kind of manager he can be. You know, we'll find out. Jury's out on it. But I think, nice fresh start gives him a chance.
You mentioned Barry Bonds just a minute ago as well. Let me ask you, how intrigued are you by Bonds, and what is the toughest challenge you think he faces now joining a Major League coaching staff?
Well, he's the smartest guy I've ever been around in the game of baseball. Brilliant, brilliant baseball mind. Knows the pitcher so well. Knows the art of hitting so well. He's a hitter's version of a Greg Maddux. And I think he'll be do wonders. And we'll see whether he likes the job or not. I'm sure he'll stay on it all year, then decide whether he wants to do it. Just because it's such a huge time commitment, lives in San Francisco, obviously in the country. But I think I think he was bored. I think he wanted this challenge, and I think he'd love for people to say, "Man, as great a hitter as he was, and certainly one of the greatest hitters of all time, this guy's a great leader and teacher as well."
USA Today Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Bob, I know you follow all 30 teams closely. Let's break down the Marlins roster just a touch. Is there an area, or is there a biggest area of concern for you?
Well, probably the pitching. I mean, they're moving the fences in. You like the top three starters there with Fernandez and Chan and Cozart. I think Edwin Jackson has a chance to be a surprise, Kohler. We'll see. I think if they could add one more starter, it would really help them. And then, just see about the bullpen. But everything's going to go right, I think, with the pitching for the Marlins to be a real factor in the NL East race.
You mentioned Edwin Jackson, a guy that could surprise people. That has yet and remains to be seen. What can you tell us about Chen and Jackson, the significance of those acquisitions here in Miami, and what we could expect out of them this season?
Well, I think you'll see a big, big difference with Chen. I mean, if you can go from the AL East, you can pitch anywhere. And let's face it, the NL East is much, much easier to pitch in than the AL East. I mean, any NL division for that matter. So I think you'll see a very good pitcher. He gave up 4 months of center field last year. Those balls won't be flying out like they were. And Jackson's the guy who will take the ball every 5 days and give you innings. I mean, he never breaks down, no excuses. He really struggled in Chicago after tough losses or getting shell during games. Never once did he make excuse for his performance.
From the pitcher's mound to the diamond, Bob, how important has D. Gordon been for the Marlins?
Well, he just, really making himself as a complete player. Perry Hill doing that. Such a great coach for him. Obviously, the Dodgers made a mistake letting him go. They didn't believe he could be this type of player. And I think with him last year, and having that new contract now can only give him confidence.
Just a couple more minutes with USA Today Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Bob, again, you follow all 30 teams very, very closely. I've got to ask you, I know he's been injury prone, but where does Giancarlo Stanton rank on your board in terms of great players currently playing?
Well, yeah, you used to love this team healthy for a year. I mean, when he's healthy, you put him right there, same category as Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. I can't wait to see what he can do, having Bonds as his hitting coach. A guy like Don Mattingly, of course, is a great hitter in his own right. So if he stays healthy, there's no reason why this guy can't, put up, 50 home runs and driving 130 or 140.
Just a couple more questions for you, Bob. Switching from Marlins to big picture stuff, I know you said it's going to be wide open. How do you see the National League East shaping up?
I think the Mets are going to take a step back. I think they're going to have a World Series hangover. I think those pitchers will be a little tired after a long season last year. And, let's face it, they lost some key people. They're not going to re-sign Cespedes and lost Murphy as well. I think they'll take a step back. We'll see about Washington. I think they get a chance. They could be scary, especially with Dusty Baker there. Their big thing was the clubhouse being so much of a big problem. And, he's a perfect guy for a clubhouse. And, the other two teams are rebuilding. So, the Braves won't be a factor, and neither will the Phillies.
For you this offseason, Bob, over the course of the hot stove, has there been a surprising move or one of the most intriguing moves to you since the end of the 2015 season?
Well, certainly, Kyle, I think you got to go with the Diamondbacks signing Zach Greinke. I mean, who would ever think they'd outbid the Dodgers for Greinke, giving them a $206 million over 6 years. So that's got to be the biggest surprise. And then, unloading their farm system and getting some help also when they made the deal with the Braves. They give them a nice 1-2 punch in the rotation with Shelby Miller as the number two guy. So they've got to be the biggest surprise with that move.
Wrapping up with USA Today Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Bob, on the way out the door here, a two-part question for you. Your favorites headed into the season, and then maybe a team from the American League and the National League that could surprise folks.
Well, I'll go with the Chicago Cubs and to win it all. It's an even year. Can't count the Giants. I like the Cubs an awful lot. Knocking the door last year, they're such a dangerous team. They've even improved themselves with their acquisitions with Hayward and getting John Lackey. So I'll take them. Then as far as surprises, I think Arizona could be a surprise. I think they'll be better. I think the White Sox have a chance to be much better than a year ago, and same with the Cleveland Indians. I think those guys could be surprised. And, in the National League, we'll see, but I would think Arizona has a chance to be the biggest surprise.
Bob, absolutely appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. It's been a pleasure. We'd love to have you on again soon.
Okay, my pleasure. Anytime.
Well, thank you to Bob Nightingale. Fun to have a national voice on the show to collect his insights on the upcoming season. Some 48 hours after we recorded that, the New York Mets found a way to re-sign Yoenis Cespedes. That's going to do it for us tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to Marlins closer A.J. Ramos. And again, a big thank you to Bob Nightingale for joining us on the show this evening. What do you say? We do it again next Monday. For our producer, Mike Lukomiak, I'm Kyle Seeloff saying thanks for joining us this evening. You've been listening to the Marlins Hot Stove Show on 940 Wins and iHeartRadio.com.